This is Scott Becker with the Becker Business Podcast. Thrilled to be joined today by brilliant consultant Mark Piscikovich. Mark, I want to ask you a question about what trends you're watching in business, what trends you're watching in pot, what's going on in Springfield, and a little bit more. Let me ask you first. You know, you live in this mix of the political world, the consulting world, the lobbying world, the cannabis world, hopefully not too much in the cannabis world, at least professionally, a lot there. Personally, hopefully not too much, but enough, I know. But the question for you today is, in Springfield, you know, we've got, you know, recent studies showed Illinois is 51st in the country in terms of states on taxation, which I guess includes a territory or so because there's only 50 states. How do they improve that? Or is there no stomach to improve that because the public workforce and so forth was so, you know, systematically for Pritzker that there's no interest in reforming that? But 51st out of 50 taxation, any thoughts on that? Or where does this go?
Well, of course, that's a perennial problem. I think in Illinois, I'm not by any means an expert on this, but we have, I think, sort of, you know, what I've heard people call structural issues. That is, if we don't do anything and just sort of continue, we're going to have this problem even if we have more money. And, you know, it's a tremendous problem, Scott. It's a problem in large part that is generated by public pension obligations. And so I'm very, very torn on this because on the one hand, it's easy to complain about bureaucrats getting cushy pensions. On the other hand, I've worked with many of these salt of the earth people for decades. They profoundly care. They have a store of knowledge which is almost unimaginable losing in state government. And, you know, they're by no means going into state government to become millionaires or billionaires. And so I think it's a very profound problem of what the pensions system is going to look like in Illinois. And obviously, it's a fight between the business community and labor unions. The problem is, you know, we are losing money. We're losing people. I don't like to buy into that narrative too much in terms of people fleeing the state. But, you know, you hear it all around you. And if you repeat something often enough, it becomes the truth. How do we solve it? I guess, Scott, I just get back to, you know, my most immediate issue, as you talked about, just as one example, in Illinois, we are now a year delayed in giving out cannabis dispensary licenses. So there's 75 licenses that have been delayed now for almost a year. And if you talk about 75 dispensary licenses, and this is actually, you know, I think speaks to the overall economic impact of this industry. But if you talk about 75 dispensary licenses, you're talking about 3,000 jobs and $100 million in taxes a year. And so Illinois really found a rare bright spot when they went down this path to legalize cannabis, and now they're stuck. And they're stuck because they can't figure out what social equity necessarily looks like, how it's going to work. But also they're stuck because, you know, somebody couldn't do the math right and forgot to, you know, check on the details and things like that. So it's a huge problem. And at least in Illinois right now, we're not doing ourselves any good and perpetuating that narrative of not being good in government. And that speaks to the figures you're citing.
But isn't that some of the problem? And you've hit it right in the button. You've obviously, you have to be careful. You work very closely with a lot of these state government employees and bureaucrats, and that's your business, and work with them. And a lot on an individual level, of course, a ton of them are very, very good people. But government as a whole here doesn't seem to work very well. I mean, when you go to other states, you go to their driver's license centers, you know, it works like clockwork. You go here, you line up for hours. It's a mess. It's, you know, you know, half the time the employees want to help and they're a pleasure, half the time they don't want to help and they're not a pleasure. And it just feels like the state is, and to the point on out-migration, the state has the largest percentage of out-migration of any state, I guess, in the country over the last decade or so, which, you know, means ultimately that tax burden falls on the rest of us that stay. And so it's a very challenging problem, isn't it? What are the, you know, each one of these dispensaries, each one of them generates how much in taxes, $1 million a year in taxes or more?
Oh, probably more. And again, it in part depends on, you know, the tax structure in Illinois is very unusual because it's based on the potency of the product. So the higher the THC percentage, the higher the tax. And so, yeah, I mean, per dispensary, you're losing, you know, $1 million plus a year, probably more in state taxes.
And now I know that they've, you know, there's this issue of like the first amount of licenses went disproportionately to probably wealthy people who could apply for them, wealthy business people. And so there's a sense that people have gotten screwed from a social equity standpoint, that not enough people of color have gotten licenses, which is a fair assessment, because when you're talking about a government issued monopoly, you want to make sure it's fairly issued. It just doesn't go to big fat hats that happen to be like, you know, white men in business interest over a certain age. You want to make sure they're spread out relatively equally. So there's a lot of, there is some fairness in it. And trying to mix that with actually getting stuff done, it's a great challenge. And again, as you point out, nobody seems to care about the tax revenues at the state level or the deficits because they're horrendous. And you've got this horrible problem of the highest taxes in the country, plus deficits that are overwhelming, and you can't seem to get out of our own way to issue these licenses, right?
That's right. And, you know, I think it just points to the simple problems, the self-inflicted wounds. I don't know if most people realize this. One of the main reasons why Illinois constantly lags in various indicators is that we live in the dark ages of computers. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if there's somewhere in a, you know, in the bowels of government, somebody sitting away, clunking away at a Commodore 64. But technology infrastructure of the state of Illinois is dismal. We keep trying to want to tweak it. It doesn't work. We sort of have to do it wholesale 1 year. We have to do it in pieces another year. And so I think that one of the things that we have not done well in Illinois is tend to the details. We tend to sort of nationalize our politics and argue about the big stuff, or we focus on corruption and the, you know, if it bleeds, it leads kind of stuff. But at the same time, we've got an Illinois Department of Employment Security that can't, you know, send out checks, answer people's phone calls because they're drowning, because they've been starved of resources for years. So this is a perennial problem. You know, maybe if we could just get people, 21st century computers over in Springfield, it'd be a good start.
Right. And so you would blame most of it on J.B. Pritzker, wouldn't you?
I don't know that I would blame it on J.B. Pritzker. I have to say that, again, in terms of cannabis, I keep seeing them just sort of make self-inflicted wound after self-inflicted wound. There, it seems to be zero empathy for all these small business people who are treading water, sort of bleeding cash while they wait for these wayward licenses. There's not been a lot of communication. And you know what's really bad is that in these applications, in the whole application process, the state did not treat these individuals as partners, even though they are. The state did not treat them as customers, even though they are, and paid thousands of dollars in fees for the privilege of having their applications screwed up. The state treated them as adversaries and continues to treat applicants and others wanting to get involved in this industry as adversaries to be held at arm's length. Well, you know what? If you keep everyone at arm's length, sometimes you can't tell social equity that's good from social equity that's, you know, astroturf versus grassroots, genuine and not. So I think the state is going to have to engage, and unfortunately, you know, maybe with a billionaire governor, the guy just doesn't like to get his hands dirty.
Do you think that if JB indulged more in cannabis, more would get done? So you'd be more concerned about the issue? Do you think the core fundamental problem is that JB doesn't get high enough?
Well, I'll tell you, I hate to cast aspersions on a product that I appreciate and, you know, that makes up a significant part of my livelihood. But I don't know if the problem is not enough or maybe too much. Somewhere in state government, there's somebody that's been hitting the joints a little too much. And that's why they can't keep a track of the points that applicants are earning. Some of it is at the state level. Some of it is at the consultant level, KPMG. But
Do you think it's the opposite, that they don't get high enough, so they're increasingly too adversarial? That's just fighting over things that don't need to be fought over, that if they were just a little bit more stoned, let's see these applications through when we make some progress.
Scott, I think you're right. And, you know, it's just like everything in life. If we got those that smoke too much or use too much and those who are too uptight and need a little bit, and we spread it all out and evened it out and made everybody happy, I think that's that might well work. And while you're, you know, sort of we're tongue-in-cheek talking about state government, what you actually suggested is the truth and the reality of what's going to have to happen. There are people with everything and there are people with nothing. And until they meet somewhere in the middle and even things out, there are always going to be these kinds of conflicts. And it's just unfortunate that in this industry and other industries, people are so busy to holding on to their own, they don't understand that they'd probably get even more if they just tried to spread the wealth.
Well, isn't that the truth, that even the sort of kingmaker of all time, who apparently or not apparently, allegedly might have taken money somehow or another from ComEd, is moving on? Will this change things, or it's unlikely to change things? It's just a built-in bureaucracy and machinery pullet barrel that it won't change things.
So I will say about Mike Madigan, I hardly know the man. I've had just a small handful of interactions with him throughout the years. One funny story, and I think articulates why it was in part time for Speaker Madigan to retire, was one time when we were talking, he referred to something that he saw on TV. And I'd never heard of it before, and it just sounded so strange until I realized he wasn't talking about TV. He saw something online. But to him, it was TV, and that's how he talked about it, because he couldn't make a distinction in his world. And so, I think him leaving will make a tremendous difference. I think Illinois made history when we elected a black speaker of the Illinois House of Representatives. I know this man personally. I talk to him from time to time. I've worked with him for years. I know he cares deeply. And you know what's been amazing? It's like our new Speaker of the House is actually like the masterful, skillful social media user that a certain president never could be. One of the things that I watched when I watched this guy become speaker, Chris Welch, he was very, very active on social media. And I thought, how is this going to change him? And it hasn't. He continues to post multiple times a day on LinkedIn, on Facebook. And he is doing a great job of communicating his own story rather than depending on others to tell his story. I think he really cares. I think he wants to do the right thing. He cares about his legacy. He cares about people. And I expect big things from Speaker Welch.
Thank you very much. You talk about legacies, and I think that's a fascinating thing. What will be the legacy of Mike Madigan and J.B. Pritzker? J.B. Pritzker, I think it still waits to be seen. It's not all over yet. I mean, he's at least, you know, he's been somewhat negatively portrayed over the last year, but there's a lot of people that are big fans of JB. But what's the long-term legacy of Mike Madigan? He was a kingmaker for 40 years. The state's got a horrible budget problem, but he was, you know, really controlled the Democratic Party in the state for 40-plus years. What's the legacy of Mike Madigan?
Well, I think it's a mixed legacy. You know, for me, the thing that I keep coming back to is the cost of corruption, right? We never really look at it that way, but every time somebody winked and nodded at somebody and somebody's cousin got a job somewhere, you know, that cost the rest of us something in government efficiency, in, you know, giving things to people in a meritorious system. And so to me, I just really think that one of the ways that Mike Madigan's legacy will be evaluated over the long term, on the one hand, he was masterful. I see him as a plumber. He could eliminate any clog when he needed to, and he could stuff up any pipe if he wanted that as well. And so he is obviously a master. But you know what? At this day and age, this hour, you and I might be the only people in the world talking about Mike Madigan anymore. That's an old story, and it also just reminds me, doesn't matter how important I am today. I'm going to retire someday, and my story will fade. You know, I think that we tend to make people bigger than they are, and I think that that doesn't necessarily help us. I always tell people the same thing. I work with a lot of doctors. I work with a lot of politicians, and people ask me, how do you treat them? I tell them, look, you treat them like human beings, because even Mike Madigan went to the bathroom. And if you think about it that way, it just tends to relieve things. In terms of J.B. Pritzker, I think it's a little bit different. I expected just stark change from Rauner to Pritzker. I haven't seen it so far. I've seen a guy who is as defensive, who is as adversarial when he wants to be, who is as vindictive, and who is no better in moving things along. And so I think one question, right? Are business people, successful business people, guaranteed success in government?
Well, clearly not. But you would think that JB, quite frankly, has proven to be more vindictive than Ron. Ron at some point said, I just don't need this. I really built my own fortune. I want to go back to what I was doing. I really am pleased to be done with this. And Pritzker, you know, is constantly sort of vindictive and feisty and yelling at everybody. It's fascinating what you say about you would say that Madigan goes to the bathroom like just like the rest of us, although the only difference is he may go to the bathroom with other people's money, where you and I have to go with our own.
That's true. But you and I don't have to be worried about cameras in the bathroom from the FBI, at least when you and I go.
Exactly. No, it's really fascinating to watch. It really is. There's a great, you know, adage about, oh my God, he's so generous, and somebody saying to the other person, Nitwit, he's being generous with your money, with our money, right? Not with his own money. You know, it's not generosity when you're giving our money and you're putting us in horrible debt as a state.
Right, and what I'm saying. You know, every time you did campaign work for me and your nephew got a salary increase at the Department of Transportation, that cost you and me, Scott.
100%. It certainly didn't cost Mike money. It cost us money. Well, I've been, you know, it's fascinating for me to watch the state politics there. It just seems to get worse and worse. But it is what it is. What a pleasure. Mark, what a pleasure to visit with you always. Just a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Scott, thanks for having me. Always fun to talk to you, especially today, about what we call sausage making in Springfield.
That's the nicest thing somebody could say about it. Thank you very much.
Good to talk to you. Take care.